With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back into The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the Odyssey app. Very happy right now to be joined by a friend of the show. He is in the Pro Baseball Hall of Fame. He is the voice of the Kansas City Royals. Denny Matthews joins us to talk about the 4-3 boys in blue. Hey, Denny.
Hi, Carrington.
Denny, the biggest thing to me this weekend watching this team was last season, I think it's fair to say their biggest problem was that they couldn't be competitive against the White Sox. Against virtually every other team in Major League Baseball, they were around a 500 team, but they were 1-9 last year against the White Sox. So obviously, just two games, very small sample size, but they appear to be worlds more competitive against Chicago than they were a season ago.
Yeah, I think that's pretty evident now. And the nice thing about the comeback was just the mental awareness of, hey, we're not out of this. And I think Mike Matheny really demands that. He's very good at getting the guys pumped up, and we're not out of this game. We're going to play a hard, tough nine innings, and we'll see what the score is at the end of those hard, tough nine innings, and it's a great mental outlook for a team.
No, it absolutely is, and just I'm sort of looking at this 10-game homestand that they have coming up. I'd be happy with 5-5. You continue to play 500 baseball, and you just tread water. I'm more on the realistic, they'll probably win four of these next 10 games. How do you expect the Royals to fare here over the next week and a half at home?
Well, I expect them to play as hard as they did against the White Sox, and I think 500 would be kind of disappointing to everybody involved. I would shoot for, why not shoot for seven? Why not shoot for seven wins? And if you win six, okay, well, you were shooting for seven, you battled hard, so I wouldn't be stunned if they did win six or seven games on the homestand, and who knows if you catch fire. And the teams that are coming in are pretty good. They're pretty competitive. So, yeah, six or seven wins on this homestand would be very good.
So yesterday the Royals had an extra inning game. Obviously they have made some changes to extra innings. As someone who has covered this game for a while, do you like it? Do you like the changes they've made to extra innings?
I do, and I was very cautious about it at first. I wanted to see how it was implemented, how it worked. Yeah, I think it's tremendous, and it's going to save a lot of pitching staffs. I mean, they might still be playing in Chicago if it weren't for the runner at second base with nobody out. Who knows? But, yeah, it's a bullpen saver. It's a pitcher saver. Yeah, in some cases, it's a fan saver, because if you play into the 14th or 15th inning of a night game, how many fans are going to be there at the end of that game? And it might be a thrilling finish for the home team, if you're the home team, the Royals, and you'd missed it because you were home in bed. So, yeah, I like it. I wasn't sure about it. I thought, be fair, give it a shot, see what you think. And now I think it's a very nice rule.
Right now we're talking to the Hall of Fame voice of the Kansas City Royals, Denny Matthews, joining us on The Drive. When you look to this Angels series, they have three pitchers who have had three varying results so far this season. Brady Singer looked good early in his last start, but then that third inning was pretty rough. Danny Duffy probably had one of his best starts in the last couple of years in his first start earlier this year. And Brad Keller, he's been disappointing, but it's also very early in the season. Let's start with Keller. What have you seen different with Keller early this season?
Just lack of command consistently. And Brad was pretty good at that last year. And when he keeps the ball down, he's a ground ball pitcher. He'll throw strikes. He's having a little trouble getting the ball in on the hitters, which is good for him because they roll over a lot of times on his pitches, and you can get ground balls, in some cases double plays. For Brad, it's just a matter of a better command consistently.
I remember you always telling me that you can't really evaluate a team until Memorial Day. So I kind of have had that same philosophy when it comes to a pitcher. I know that Brad Keller hasn't really had these kind of slumps in his career, but we got to talk about 4 to maybe 6 starts before I start to get worried about a guy like Keller, who for the most part of his career has been pretty solid.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And for pitchers, it's you're going to be different every time you walk out there. And you may think in the bullpen you're warming up, boy, I got great stuff tonight. And you go out there and get shelled in the second inning. The other side of that coin is you're throwing in the bullpen, your command is off, it doesn't feel right, the release point is here, there, and everywhere, and you're thinking, oh, man, this is going to be a tough game. And you go out and pitch a 3-hit shutout. And that's the great thing about the game of baseball, because as good as pitchers are, and if a pitcher gets 30, 32 starts, he's going to feel different every time out there, and you never know what you're going to get. And that's what makes it really intriguing.
I watch a lot of NBA, and I think we've seen an effect of not having fans in the stadium. I mean, shooting numbers right now are just absolutely through the roof, and some of the results of the game don't feel very real. Last year, baseball didn't have any fans. They're now starting to infuse fans back into the game. What differences have you noticed in the sport last year where there wasn't that crowd interaction to what we've seen the first week and a half of the season?
Well, I think if you have 10,000 people, it's a heck of a lot better than having no people. And the guys noticed that, and they made it through last year. And you got to remember that everybody who plays in the big leagues played Little League and high school and college, and not a lot of people come to the baseball games except in the big colleges. The big conferences will have decent crowds with decent weather, but I can remember back to my college days, everybody came to the football games, and we didn't get very many for our baseball games. So, yeah, having the people there makes a difference. Some players will tell you, I don't even pay any attention to the crowd. I don't even hear them. They do.
Denny, I'm curious to get your take on this, because maybe this is like some back in my day, and I'm thinking of when I was a kid growing up and becoming a fan of baseball, there were certain players that could get me to go to the park. Like Derek Jeter was one of those guys that would get me to want to go to the park, or when they played an interleague game against the Braves, and Chipper Jones and Griffey. And I just sort of grew up where there were guys that you could feel there was a buzz in the ballpark whenever they were there. You've seen Mike Trout. Would you put him on that list? Like when you're at the ballpark, do you feel like people understand the kind of caliber of player that they're seeing with him?
I would say so, yeah, because, again, it's kind of like a starting pitcher. You're really not sure what you're going to see, right? But in the old days, and you're talking about your old days, and you're pretty old now, but the thing that really intrigued people and fans back in the old days was the pitching matchups. And you always look in the newspaper, who's pitching against who tonight? And if you had, let's say you had Bob Gibson against Sandy Koufax, who wouldn't want to see that game? And so the crowd would be overflow. And so, yeah, anytime a headline player or pitcher is going to be involved, I think people are going to be intrigued by seeing what has he got tonight.
I feel the same way about pitchers, because Robin, our producer, and I, we were kind of debating, and I'm trying to think of the list of pitchers. Like, I'd be really excited if Clayton Kershaw came to town, or Max Scherzer. Like, there's a couple of different pitchers. Heck, if in this own series, Shohei Ohtani was pitching in this series, I'd make it a point to get out there to the ballpark to see him pitch. I think there's way more of those pitchers that kind of move the needle right now than there are positional players and hitters.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And there used to be more. I mean, if you go back to the 60s and 70s when starters would finish, and that's the thing you really don't get much at all today in today's game at the highest level. And that's why the Marichal against Drysdale and Koufax against Gibson and Fergie Jenkins against Lawrence Vaughn, whatever. Yeah, that's why people came to the ballpark, because you were going to see two Hall of Fame pitchers with great stuff. And how does our team attack that great pitcher? And is he going to shut us down? And you don't know. So, yeah, I think that was one of the more exciting things about, let's say, baseball in the old days.
Denny, last question here, and I appreciate your time. We've seen a lot of off days so far, certainly understanding why they have them in case there's a rain out, they can move back an opening day. What effect do you think that has on the game? Because baseball is such a timing and rhythm game, and at least the start of the season hasn't really had a chance to gain that kind of rhythm and momentum yet.
Yeah, that always happens, doesn't it? It's a baseball in April is stop, start, stop, uh-oh, rain, start, no more rain, up, game canceled. Next day, we're going to play. Yeah, it's nice. And, you know, it's like that in April, and everybody knows it. And you're right. Baseball is a game of continuity, of habit, of rhythm, and people get into it. Now you're playing every day. Things settle in, and it's more like baseball.
That is Denny Matthews, the Hall of Fame voice of the Kansas City Royals, joining us on the show today as we prepare for the Royals having a 10-game homestand here at Kauffman Stadium. Denny, always good talking baseball with you. Thanks for coming on today.
You're welcome, Carrington.
Always good to catch up with the Hall of Fame voice of the Kansas City Royals, Denny Matthews. Some news in the NFL, not certainly worthy of the breaking news sounder. Giovanni Bernard signed a one-year deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That wouldn't really be of note, but Ian Rappaport said that Kansas City was interested in Giovanni Bernard, but he ended up signing a deal to play with Tom Brady. This isn't, to me, one of those, how could the Chiefs miss out on this player? I don't think Bernard has a whole lot left in the tank. I'm just really surprised that they'd be interested in Bernard when I think he's the exact same player that Damian Williams was. I mean, they had this guy already on their roster, and they got rid of him. So now they're going to be interested in a guy who hasn't rushed for more than 4 yards a carry since 2017. Just really odd to me they'd be interested in Bernard when I think they got rid of him already this offseason.
I don't think that they need to make any more additions. Darwin Thompson train's probably left the tracks completely fallen off at this point. That's probably done. But as far as like Edwards-Helaire and Darryl, like I feel like they're going to give Edwards-Helaire every opportunity to be the guy that we made him out to be for a while last year. Remember right out the gates, he had the 150 yards and the touchdown. And I, like a lot of people in this town, got really excited and said, oh my goodness, this guy could have 10 touchdowns and 1,500 yards. He really could next year. So in the last few years, I understand we've had to talk about the second and third running back because it's been by committee and we didn't know which Williams was the best. We didn't know who was going to start in the playoffs. It's been a different guy. Edwards-Helaire is the dude now and for the next few years.
I mean, I'd still be pretty interested in picking up a number two running back, especially be giving Clyde Edwards-Helaire size. Like, I don't know if that's a guy that you think can be a number one kind of workhorse kind of player, but Giovanni Bernard, that just wouldn't be the number two option. Like, I don't think that's a better option than anybody you currently have in the roster. I don't know how deep the Chiefs' interest was in him as a player, but it comes from Ian Rappaport, so it's certainly something you got to at least pay attention to or listen to in some aspects. Giovanni Bernard, who has played 9 years in the league with the Cincinnati Bengals, he has now left the Bengals. He will be joining the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to join the defending Super Bowl champion. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. We'll also take a journey inside the mind of the machine. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Coming up momentarily, we'll take a trip inside the mind of the machine. We'll also give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. The Patriots have terminated the contract of Julian Edelman. He is listed as a failed physical. We assume that Julian Edelman will be on the Buccaneers by the end of the day. I don't really know what other team he would go to outside of playing with Tampa Bay and Rob Gronkowski down in Tampa. So we are assuming that Julian Edelman will be the newest member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, he's already on a flight there, I'm sure. He probably intentionally failed the physical, a la Gronk, to just take some time off and then end up back with Tom Brady in a much better situation to get the hell away from Bill Belichick. He'd look good here, though. Right? Like cheap.
I don't have any interest in Julian Edelman.
Cheap old slot wide receiver. Going to go out there, probably get you like still 5 or 6 touchdowns. Yeah, I'd do it.
Yeah, I don't have any interest in Julian Edelman joining the Kansas City Chiefs. Coming up in a little bit, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. But Rob, let's take a journey inside the mind of the machine.
K-State great Darren Sproles finally gets his own bobblehead doll. What's the best bobblehead doll you ever got?
I've never really been a bobblehead person, to be completely honest with you about it.
Yeah, but if you get like a Salvi Jedi bobblehead doll, put it up on your desk for a while, right?
I don't have any bobbleheads in my house.
Zero bobbleheads?
Not a single bobblehead.
I have a Ralph LaFriend's bobblehead doll that if my house is on fire, I'd go in and grab. Speaking of Rape of the Friends and college basketball, I'm wearing that shirt you got me that says Mount Rushmore with the Rush brothers on it. Who is the better college Rush brother? Was it Brandon, Kareem, or Jerron?
I think Kareem had the best season out of them individually. His junior year, he was really good his junior
Baller.
Year. Brandon was probably the best player out of all of them, though.
Jerron left real quick. He was a one and done or two and done at UCLA, but he was good while he was there. And then, like, yeah, Kareem had those awesome matchups a few years in a row with Kirk Heinrich. I love that back in the day. Tony La Russa, the White Sox manager, 76 years old. Let's play a quick game of who's older, C-Dot, Betty White or Bob Barker?
Bob Barker.
No, Betty White. Betty White's 99 years old. Bob Barker's a spry 97. How about Scott Steiner or Bret Hart?
Scott Steiner.
No, Bret Hart's older. He's 63. Scott Steiner's only 55. Elton John, the Rocket Man, or O.J. Simpson?
O.J.'s lived a rough life. I'm going to go Elton John.
Yeah, Elton's older. He's 74. O.J.'s 73, going on 115. Did you see who Evander Holyfield's going to be fighting?
Prison does that to you. Also, the guilt of knowing that you killed
him. May or may not, allegedly. Allegedly.
I mean, at this point, he's writing books. If I hypothetically did it, wink, wink. What was your next question?
It wasn't hypothetical. That was not part of the title. It was just if I did it. That's all. He didn't even bother to put hypothetical in the title.
Yeah, no, then he did that interview and was like, well, no, if I had done it, this is what I would have done.
No, I'm asking you if Evander Holyfield comes back and fights Kevin McBride. Does that do anything for you?
No, no interest in it.
What about, and I'm being dead serious, are you guys going to watch Jake Paul fight Ben Askren coming up on Saturday?
I'll say maybe. I'm not going to definitively say one way or the other. Possibly.
I'm looking forward to
perhaps.
It because Ben Askren, MU Tiger, is one of the best wrestlers the UFC's ever seen, but his striking leaves a lot to be desired. And then you got Jake Paul, who's just some YouTube kid, but he can really throw hands. Like, it's basically even money. Nobody's a heavy favorite in this. I'm looking forward to it. I'm kind of embarrassed to say it, but I'm looking forward to watching Jake Paul fight again. I really am. Steph Curry's the best three-point shooter of all time. Who's the second best three-point shooter of all time? Do you agree, first of all, Steph Curry?
Yeah, of course. Right. It's kind of hard, like, I think the answer is Larry Bird.
Larry Bird.
But I think just the rules and the way that they are, I don't think he can be two. I'll say Reggie Miller, and I'll go Ray Allen third.
Where does J.J. Redick come in on this list?
Maybe top 20.
Maybe top 20. I'm going Curry one, Reggie two, Ray Allen three.
I mean, Klay Thompson is a better shooter than J.J. Redick is.
Yeah, Klay can certainly knock down. Have you ever seen the Klay Thompson sports science?
Maybe.
So they turn the lights out on him. So they let him shoot 23-pointers from the same spot, like the elbow, and he knocks down 18 of them. And then they turn the lights out, completely pitch black. And from his muscle memory, he knocks down 15 of 20 NBA threes from the elbow in pitch black. It's crazy.
We're going to put the Steph Curry MVP thing to bed now, like I said a month ago. You ever ready to join the bandwagon?
Who you got?
I mean, anyone but Steph, but probably Joel Embiid, but Steph no longer is in the conversation. He can go away now.
Embiid better get
healthy. I don't
know
why Chris Paul's not getting more respect for it.
Chris Paul? From State Farm?
I kind of feel like Chris Paul or Donovan Mitchell deserve more of a look than they've got.
Dame probably deserves more of a look than he's got.
They're going to be like the sixth seed, though. Just tough to win MVP if you're going to be the sixth seed.
Bro, your Lakers going to be like the ninth seed.
I mean, they're definitely making the playoffs.
Yeah, they're going to have to play in that play-in tournament just to get there. So if you pull up to a four-way stop.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really crazy when LeBron and AD come back and they win the championship then as the eighth seed.
That is going to be crazy.
It's going to be wild.
It's not going to happen. It's going to be crazy when they get knocked out the first round because LeBron can't carry him himself when AD's still hurt. That's going to be crazy. I pulled up to a four-way stop this weekend, and my girlfriend kept telling me, wait, just be patient. If four cars, this is not like a trick question. I just want to know your answer. If four cars pull up to a four-way stop at the same time, who's got the right of way?
I don't know. I mean, I probably would just start waving at people.
I've always thought that it's the person with the cheapest car, right? Like, if you don't care about your vehicle, then you just hit the gas. And that's what I told her and almost caused a four-way collision. But yeah, that's the right answer. There's probably technically a legal answer, the car to the right or something, but it's just whoever's got the cheapest car. You just go ahead and go. You didn't watch any of the UFC fights on Saturday, did you?
No. I mean, you'll know when I watch the UFC fight. Believe me, you'll know.
All right.
I don't know who was fighting, honestly. Other than that clout chasing guy, I don't know anything else about what happened.
No, you didn't miss a whole bunch.
That's what I'm saying. You want to know how I know the guy was clout chasing? We don't know anything else that happened. I don't know the guy's name, honestly, or who he fought. I just know that he wants to play Patrick Mahomes in pickleball, don't we all?
You should give this guy some love. Like, he's a Kansas City guy. You're a Kansas City guy.
I don't know him.
The Cuban Missile Crisis, Julian Marquez. Call us up. Come on the show. So the Royals are 4-3 through the first 7 games. Once they're 15 games into this thing, are they still over 500?
I'm going to go no. I got them going 4-6 in this homestand, so no.
You, bro. Unbelievable. What do the Royals do with Nicky Lopez once Adalberto?
I know it's wild that I'm staying to my prediction for the team. I know it's nuts.
You might as well stay here as long as you can. That's all I'm saying.
It's insane that I'm keeping in line with how many games I said they were going to win. I know. It's wild. Who would think so?
What do you do with Nicky Lopez once Mondesi comes back?
I don't know when Mondesi's coming back. I don't think that question has to be answered today if you're the Royals.
All right, well, let's see.
I don't think the Mondesi's coming back for the next 10 days. So let's see how the next 10 days go. Like, if Nicky Lopez is still hitting really well and you've got a 20-game sample, then I think you're faced with a very difficult decision. But I don't think that question needs to be asked or really answered at this point. They still got a lot of time to make it.
I wouldn't be tripping at all. If anything, I'd consider it a blessing that Nicky Lopez is tearing the cover off the ball right now. I mean, I know we're a week into this thing, but he's hitting .333. We've seen 550 at-bats of Nicky Lopez, and so far through his first, whatever, at 50 at-bats this year, he looks so much better than he has at any point. So maybe he's turned it around a little bit. It's a very first-world problem to have, because earlier this year I was saying Nicky Lopez shouldn't even be on the big league ball club, and the Royals tended to agree with me. And then because of a weird set of circumstances, he did. And now you want to talk about taking advantage of the opportunity. He's proven, at least this season so far, that he belongs here. So keep him up, make him more of a utility guy, put Mondesi in at shortstop, and now you're really cooking with something.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a small sample size with Nicky Lopez. He has 21 at-bats so far this season. So
I said 50, I lied.
Let's see what it looks like with Nicky Lopez at the end of this homestand and when Adalberto Mondesi is ready. But again, I don't really think the Royals are even in a position where they're even thinking about it at this point, because I don't think anybody knows when Mondesi's going to come back, given the injury that he has.
And his average is very fraudulent. It's comically fraudulent. His BABIP is .368. When that normalizes, his average will fall again. They should send him down when Mondesi comes back.
That's how I feel, man. Check the BABIP, dog. You don't know nothing about the BABIP.
The what?
BABIP, batting average of balls in play.
That ain't a thing.
Yeah, it's a real thing. It basically accounts for luck factor.
BABIP.
And he's mad lucky.
BABIP.
According to BABIP.
Luck. Big luck factor.
I know you guys are saying BABIP.
B-A-B-I-P, batting average of balls in play.
Yeah,
BABIP.
That's what we need, another random-ass baseball stat that nobody understands.
I mean, that's a better stat than average, if we're being honest.
BABIP. You know who Clark Hunt is, right, Carrington?
Yeah, friend of the show.
Good friend of the show.
Yo, next time
we're going to watch a game together.
Next time he comes on the show, I got to amend our bet. I got to be like, I got to ask, if the Chiefs make the playoffs, can we go in the suite? Like, I really oversold it. I should have made it where it was easier for us to go in there.
What was the deal? They had to win the Super Bowl?
They had to win the Super Bowl. And, of course, he was hating, so the Chiefs got smoked.
Oh, yeah, it's my fault. Gracie Hunt, his daughter, was named Miss Kansas, so congratulations to her. I'm honestly embarrassed for you, me, and the show the same way that you are when I asked Patrick Mahomes to use the dog boys that you
see
asked.
What I mean? That's what happened.
You
started
asked the owner of the Kansas City Chiefs if your bum ass and Rob with his Cheeto fingers can go into the suite at Arrowhead Stadium, which is strictly for literally the most important people, which y'all don't make that list. Now, if you do, I'd like to come if that's cool, but I ain't let you in there.
I mean, come on now. I would fit in at Clark Hunt's suite like you wouldn't believe. I'd fit in like a glove.
Yeah.
You guys wouldn't even know that I don't belong in there.
You must have quit, and you'd be like, get the hell out of here. You made Outside the Mind and Machine, as always, brought to you by 7th Street Casino. 7th Street Casino, that's where it's at.
Coming up on the other side, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. And I was reading an article this weekend on the NFL, and it said the only locks in the AFC to make the playoffs are the Chiefs and the Bills. Do you agree? We'll answer the question next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Your National Cash Contest code word for 3 o'clock is machine. M-A-C-H-I-N-E. Machine. M-A-C-H-I-N-E. Machine. Text that word to 72881. You could be the $1,000 winner in the National Cash Contest. The Cash Contest is powered by BetQL. Let BetQL's proven data and analytics help you become a better better. Download the BetQL app today. The code word for 330 is machine. M-A-C-H-I-N-E. Text that word to 72881 and you could possibly be the $1,000 winner in our National Cash Contest. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll talk a little bit about the NFL draft. But speaking of the NFL, so I was reading a story this weekend on NFL.com from Greg Rosenthal, and it was sort of power ranking, sort of tier system, sort of AFC hierarchy. And in tier one, he had Kansas City and the Buffalo Bills. And the first sentence of the story said, I would be really surprised, barring catastrophic injury, if either Kansas City or Buffalo may or miss the playoffs. These are the only two teams in the AFC that I feel this way about. I agree. Something would have to go terribly wrong. And I don't care what they do at left tackle, but something would terribly have to go wrong for Kansas City to not be one of the seven best teams this year in the AFC. And the exact same thing for the Buffalo Bills. My question is, why do we not put the Ravens in this category? Like, I don't really understand what the Ravens have done over the last three seasons with Lamar Jackson at quarterback that would make you think that they're going to miss the playoffs. Lamar Jackson has been the starting quarterback for 37 regular season games for the Ravens. They've won 30 of those games. I don't get why the Ravens aren't treated. I'm not saying they should be in the same category of the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs have done it for a lot longer and won at a much higher level. But what has Buffalo done to now lock themselves into this where we can't see them winning less than 11 or 12 games this year, but yet the Ravens are in a very different category, and the Ravens are in a much tougher division and have proven it for longer than Buffalo's proven it?
Well, so you just answered your own question, because Buffalo gets a chance to play the Patriots, who are going to win six games next year, the Jets, who are going to win four games, and the Dolphins, who probably do about what they did last year, maybe take a little bit of a step back, so they win 9 or 10 games. I mean, That's five or six free wins right there. If you're the Baltimore Ravens, remember, you didn't win the division last year. Pittsburgh, I don't think Pittsburgh's any good. Something tells me their confidence is completely shot, and they're probably like a 6 or 7 win team. But the rest of that division is big time on the come up. I'm not saying Joe Burrow's ready just yet with the Bengals, but I think they're going to be a much better team. And then Cleveland is trouble. Like, if you ask me today, April, where are we, 12th? Who's the third best team in the AFC? I remember last summer we had this conversation a lot. We said Kansas City 1, then we said Baltimore 2. And then about a month into it, we were going, maybe it's actually not Baltimore. Maybe it's one of these other teams. I said the entire time, I'm not so sure the Baltimore's this team we're making it not to be. I want to see a team have a stretch like the Chiefs did, where they did it for 2, 3, 4, 5 years in a row before I kind of anoint them. I don't know if Baltimore's any better than the 4th, 5th best team in the AFC when you really break it down. To me, it's Kansas City 1, it's Buffalo 2. And then if you want to say Baltimore 3, I'm not going to fight you. I'll say Cleveland 3. Somebody might say Indy. I mean, there's a bunch of teams after Kansas City and Buffalo that just kind of fall into place.
What has Cleveland done that surpasses what Baltimore did?
Talent and won playoff games.
I mean, last year, Baltimore won a playoff game the same way that Cleveland won a playoff game last year, and they played two times in the same division, and Baltimore beat Cleveland both times last season. Like, I understand if we're now maybe projecting a little bit in the future towards Cleveland, and again, I'm not here arguing that Baltimore is on the same level of Kansas City.
Stock in between those two teams you just mentioned, though? Cleveland or Baltimore? Because to me, Baltimore's yesterday's news and Cleveland's the next best thing.
Based on what, though, about Baltimore?
Their talent. And also, I think that last year we saw by the numbers that Lamar Jackson took a little bit of a regression. We all knew he wasn't going to throw for 36 touchdown passes. That was a bit of an anomaly. I think that now that there's film on him, I wouldn't be surprised if he takes another little bit of a step back. Some more tread comes off those tires. I'm not a huge Lamar Jackson guy. I mean, I like him, but if you're talking about better than Cleveland for the next two or three years, I don't think so.
I'm just looking at it. I don't know how anyone could come to the conclusion that Baker Mayfield is a better quarterback than Lamar Jackson.
The team's better,
like,
I think.
The numbers just don't really justify it.
I think everything except for the coach. Like, Baker versus Lamar, to me, for the next 4 or 5 years, I know I'm not the biggest Baker guy. To me, it's a wash. It really is. You take the talent. You take the defenses. I think that Cleveland, to me, is what Baltimore was supposed to be a couple of years ago. We were talking about them being so dangerous. They had the MVP. They won 12 games in a row. That's what Cleveland could be next year. If you ask me right now, it's Kansas City 1. It's Buffalo 2. And they're a pretty clear 1 and 2. Would you say Baltimore's still number 3 in the AFC?
I think Baltimore's the clear third best team in the AFC.
I don't think they're anywhere close to clear. I think they're like maybe 5 or 6. There's an argument you made that Indy's better than them. Tennessee's better than them. There's a bunch of teams that are in that kind of same family with Baltimore.
I don't get it with Cleveland to say that everybody else does, at least taking this kind of step. Like, they still got to prove it to me. I know they won a playoff game last year. They beat what we thought was the worst team that entered the playoffs. I guess maybe you could argue Washington was the worst team that entered the playoffs. Maybe Chicago. But, I mean, their wins last year they just didn't do it for me last year. Like, they just didn't really show me that they're the kind of team that you think that they are, and having them be the third best team in the AFC. That's not where I am with Cleveland. You know, I was high on Cleveland last year. I picked them to make the playoffs and got laughed at on the show for picking Cleveland. Now, to me, to be in this category where it's like, yeah, I'm taking them to win 11 games again last year, when we talked about it all season. I think the same thing that propped Pittsburgh up last season when we knew that they weren't good enough is the same thing that helped Cleveland make the playoffs. These were the wins that Cleveland had last year. Cincinnati, Washington, Dallas, Indy, Cincy, Houston, Philly, Jacksonville. They had a good win against Tennessee. They beat the Giants, and they had that end of the season win against Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh was completely falling off a cliff. They lost their two games to Baltimore last year and just didn't really have that many marquee wins to me.
Part of it is projecting going forward, though, and not really worrying about what they've been the last couple of years, because 2 years ago they were a major disappointment. I mean, if you think about it, they had the same talent that they have right now, essentially. That's the year they added Odell Beckham, and they were terrible last year. You always tell me that teams have to take these incremental steps if you're going to eventually get to and win a Super Bowl. So they kind of sucked. Then they got better last year, won 10 games, won a playoff game. That, to me, looks like a 12-win team that's going to be trouble in the AFC.
I mean, isn't that what Baltimore was last year? I mean, Baltimore technically took a step forward. They won a playoff game last year.
I'm talking about to Kansas City. Like, what, as a Chiefs fan, as somebody that covers this team for a living, what scares you about Baltimore? I've seen that so many times. It's like, you know, you always tell me styles make fights. Well, if you've gotten in that fight one time and you beat the guy down, then the second time you submit him, then the third time you knocked him out, are you really scared of that guy?
No, I don't think you should be. I also don't think there's any reason to be afraid of the Cleveland Browns. We saw the Cleveland Browns play Kansas City. I think they were on course to getting the absolute beats put on them before Patrick Mahomes got hurt.
It's the unknown factor, though. Like, with Baltimore, you know you're going to whoop their ass because you've done it three times. Same thing like when you played, I think, Buffalo last year. There's a little bit of a, uh-oh, this is the new kid on the block. Is it their time? And we found out the answer was no. But again, I also think that the Chiefs are still the best team in the AFC. And I think that Buffalo is – I think that the gap between Buffalo and Kansas City is certainly closer entering next season than I thought it was the season before with Baltimore and Kansas City, if that makes any sense. But I still think Kansas City is the best team in the AFC.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk a little bit of Royals baseball, but let's talk some NFL draft and three major questions.
Yeah, I think that there's three questions that everybody's got interest in. Then in Kansas City, of course, the one we all want to know is, are the Chiefs going to draft at 31, and are the Chiefs going to get a left tackle first? And I think maybe the most interesting thing of all, because it involves both an MU Tiger Carrington and a division team with the Denver Broncos, what does Denver do? with their first pick. So they're sitting at, where's Denver, at 9?
They are at 9.
Sitting at 9 in the first round. They've kind of gave Drew Lock a fair crack at being their starter. I mean, last year, I don't know if you can really say that. They had so many injuries on the offensive line and Cortland Sutton, and everybody was hurt. Noah Fant, like everybody got hurt. I wonder what Denver's going to do with the 9th overall pick. Do they trade up? Do they stay put? Do they take a quarterback? And if they don't take a quarterback, then that tells us after about 30 minutes into the draft that Drew Lock is their guy, at least this year going forward. To me, that's really interesting. In the top 10, what do the Broncos do with that number 9 pick?
If the Denver Broncos are going to allow Justin Fields to slip further than they are, I think that is something that they will end up regretting. What's been the weirdest, funniest, I don't know the correct term about it, but we went from after the college football playoff to feeling like Justin Fields was the clear second best quarterback in the draft. Now somehow he could be the 5th best quarterback in the draft when nothing has really changed. So if one's going to be Trevor Lawrence, we've known that for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Now 2, we expect to be Zach Wilson from BYU. 3, I think it's going to be Mac Jones from Alabama. You're telling me that now there's a chance. So we know that Miami's not taking a quarterback. We know Cincinnati's not taking a quarterback. I'm starting to believe that Atlanta's not going to take a quarterback, and also Carolina. Denver, in theory, unless a team trades ahead of them, which is obviously a strong possibility that that could happen, but Denver's going to have a choice between Trey Lance and Justin Fields if they want to. If they let Justin Fields slip away and they end up taking a cornerback or a linebacker like Micah Parsons, it just explains why the Broncos have been the Broncos since Peyton quit.
Which brings me to our second most interesting thing to look forward to in the draft coming up in a couple of weeks. You mentioned Miami was sitting at 3. They trade out. San Francisco trades in. Jimmy appears to no longer be the dude for the 49ers. You think they go with Mac Jones?
I do think Mac Jones is going to be the 3rd overall pick.
That's crazy. That's wild. Only because of what you just said, that Justin Fields has been the guy for a long time, and Mac Jones feels like kind of the flavor of the month. I wouldn't mess with him, and my reasoning is not very sound, but here it is. How many great Alabama NFL quarterbacks has Nick Saban put in the league? He's always got so much talent around him. That's why with Tua, like, I was never a believer. When you've got 3 first-round offensive linemen and 4 first-round wide receivers, how good do we know you are at actually throwing the football? I wouldn't take Mac Jones at 3. That, to me, is very interesting because San Francisco, as you said, they can't get Trevor Lawrence. He's gone. They can't get Zach Wilson. I'm pretty sure he's going to go number 2. But besides that, they can get any of these quarterbacks they want. They got a real decision to make.
So Bet Online, they have Mac Jones as being a minus 200 favorite right now to be the number 3 overall pick in this year's NFL draft.
So that's the pick.
You can get Justin Fields at 5-1. You can get Trey Lance at 13-4. You can get Zach Wilson at 14-1. There's no chance that Zach Wilson is going to be available for San Francisco to select for the 3rd overall pick. What confuses me most about the Mac Jones trade up, San Francisco didn't feel like they could get Mac Jones at 8 or 9.
Right?
Like, they really felt like they had to go from 12-3 to ensure that they were going to get Mac Jones. Now, I know that mock drafts are a fool's errand, but I don't remember seeing, and you look at this, Rob, as often as I do, I didn't see any mock draft pre this trade that had Mac Jones going in the top 8. Now we think that there was a chance he was going to go in the top 5. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And I also look at Mac Jones and sort of where the NFL is trending in the direction. I just don't think he's athletic enough. Like, I don't think he's athletic enough to do the things that you need to do to play quarterback at a high level in this era. I would pass on him, but San Francisco thinks they know something that the rest of us don't know. I fear they're going to be wrong.
You've heard of teams putting up a smokescreen, you know, giving every indication we're making this move because we're about to take this guy, and they swing the other way. San Francisco's not really doing that because, as you point out, we know the top 2 picks are going to be. So with 3, they've basically got their pick of 3 different quarterbacks. They can get Mac Jones, they can get Trey Lance, or they can get Justin Fields. Who are they really fooling here? I'm with you. They traded up maybe when they didn't have to, which brings me to the 3rd most interesting thing that happens in this draft. You said you don't think Atlanta takes a quarterback. If not now, when? Because I think there's a chance that there's a lot of shuffling at the top, and we see quarterbacks taking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, these teams that have these veteran quarterbacks, like the Lions with Matthew Stafford for a long time, and you got a team like the Atlanta Falcons with Matt Ryan. If their guy's on the board and they feel like now's the time, maybe now you trade up a couple of spots, or at least you stay pat and take your quarterback of the future. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see more movement than we've seen in a long time at the top of the draft, and it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Mac Jones. Trey Lance and Justin Fields.
I'd be surprised if it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't think that the fourth pick would be made by Atlanta if they're taking a quarterback. When you look at the contracts and sort of how it's put together, Matt Ryan this year would count for $70 million against the cap if he got released.
Gracious.
Next year, he would count for $40 million after the cap. So Matt Ryan is locked into being the Falcons quarterback for the next two seasons. Eventually, yes, they will go out and grab another quarterback. I think that's where we're probably going to see Kyle Pitts off the board, and they're just going to try to continue to stockpile their offense, and they'll probably start to think ahead. I do think it makes a lot of sense for Atlanta. Justin Fields from Georgia started his college career at Georgia. I think it would make a lot of sense, but I think that I think eventually Atlanta is going to trade the fourth pick to a team that is going to take a quarterback, and I think Denver would make a lot of sense. Like, if you're Denver and you want to ensure that you get yourself a quarterback and you're willing to trade a future first-round pick, I think you trade up to 4 and you go grab Justin Fields if you're the Denver Broncos.
As far as the Chiefs go, I think the three most interesting things that we have to look forward to in the draft coming up in a couple of weeks here, C-Dot, do they take a left tackle at 31, or do they maybe trade up to get their left tackle if that guy's there at 25 or 26? When do they nab a wide receiver? Because we all agree at some point they're going to get a wide receiver. Are they going to wait till the second round like they did with Hardman? Are they going to find their guy in the first round? Are they going to trade back and add picks to get that wide receiver? I really don't know how they're going to address it because, frankly, I thought they were going to address it in the offseason. They haven't. And then third, you and I differ on this. When it comes to the cornerback, like, whenever you say the names out loud, it kind of makes me go, like, that doesn't sound real great. But then you think about where they got Fenton, where they got Ward, where they got Snead. I think that Brett Veach is going to do his thing late in the draft, 5th, 6th, 7th round, and end up getting another cornerback. That's what I'm looking for. When does he grab a cornerback? When does he grab a wide receiver? And damn it, please, for anxiety purposes, when do they get that left tackle?
I mean, I don't have any issues with them not investing in the draft when it comes to corner, as long as they bring back a veteran. Like, we saw today that A.J. Bouye signed a deal with the Carolina Panthers for a 2-year, $7 million contract. Now, obviously, he's off the board, but a guy that obviously knows the system very well, and Bashaud Breeland is still out there.
Yeah, what's up with Breeland?
If the plan is to bring Bashaud Breeland back on a 2-year, $7 million deal, and we're not going to address corner early on, and we'll keep doing what we've done, and we're taking mid-round flyers on corners, I don't have an issue with it. But you would, like, part of why it's worked for them, and they've been able to kind of pick and choose where they've selected, is they have an established veteran who's played above his contract for the last couple of years in Bashaud Breeland. So it really depends on me and sort of where I am in evaluating what need is for corner. Is Bashaud Breeland going to be on the roster? If they sign Bashaud Breeland to a deal tomorrow, you're not really going to hear me complain too much about the cornerback situation, and I think their cornerback situation is fine. If they're going to go into the draft and the most experienced player they would then have playing corner would be DeAndre Baker. He's coming off a significant injury. I just think you need to add reinforcements and or get a veteran.
I know he's a little grabby at times, and I know that you like to talk smack on his hip-hop career, but they kind of need Bashaud Breeland,
absolutely,
don't they? Like, at this point,
I don't know if they need Bashaud Breeland
They need a Bashaud Breeland.
They need a veteran corner
Bashaud
on the
Breeland
roster.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Like, that's not – there's. We always talk about here's what the Chiefs need, and then we try to put a square peg in a round hole. Oh, Sammy Watkins. No. Like, I've seen Bashaud Breeland the last couple of years in a Chiefs uniform. I understand they like him, don't love him, because even last offseason they didn't give him a long-term contract. That becomes one of those moves from now to the beginning of the season that the Chiefs pretty much, in my opinion, have to make.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll talk some Royals baseball with Mike Trout coming into town. Before we do that, there is a story right now that is circulating the internet where Usher, very popular musician, Usher was in an Atlanta strip club casually throwing dollars. Nothing wrong with that. We know sometimes artists, musicians, entertainers like to, blow off a little steam, make it rain in a strip club. Well, the reason why Usher has found himself in the news today is Usher was not throwing regular money. Usher was throwing counterfeit money.
What?
With his face on it. So I'm not talking like he wasn't throwing like normal fake hundreds. Like, he's not trying to pass these off as real bucks. It's not like he's going to Target trying to buy something with the fake funny money. I'm saying is he went into the outhouse with a briefcase full of Usher bucks and then went in there and is making it rain with all these hundreds and twenties for the gram. But then when the young ladies pick up the dollars and they see that Benjamin Franklin isn't on there, but the guy that sings Yeah is on there, it then became an issue. She then posted it on Instagram and Usher has been getting flamed. This is my question.
Do the dollars spend? That's my question.
I don't think you can put your face on money and go spend it at the store. That seems like a first class trip to be
up at Leavenworth.
Yeah, I would think so. I've heard that in the past. Like, you can't tear up money, you can't burn money. But then I've also been to Las Vegas, and I've seen places that you can go. Now, kind of, you know, in the back alleys, a little bit off the strip, now that I think about it, these shady-type parlor places. But, yeah, you can get your face on a $20 bill. I got my face on a $5, bro.
Are you going to spend it at the store?
No.
Because I'm saying
no, hell no. Well, then, it's in a frame.
That's what we're talking about here. Usher was trying to spend the money at the place. Is this smart or not smart by Usher? Because I actually kind of think here, if we're talking about Usher was also mixing in some real bills here. So let's say he was making it rain with fake hundreds, but he has some real ones in there, but just wanted the effect. I actually think this is kind of smart. I actually think this is kind of forward thinking here by Usher Raymond.
I think that an Usher fake, is it a dollar or a hundred?
He had $100
denominations.
He had $100, 20s, and ones.
Something tells me that if you put one of those on
eBay. He had a whole Monopoly tray of fake
money.
Why
would you bother? Like, if you're Usher and you're the dude and you're super rich and you're in your own hometown, you can put your face on the money. I have no problem with that. Why would you bother putting your face on ones? Just put it on a bunch of Benjis. But yeah, I mean, you're talking about Usher here. Like, that guy, he can do whatever he wants. At least he wasn't making it hail. One time at the outhouse in 2002, I saw my buddy Palomba make it hail with 50-cent pieces and quarters. I've never been so embarrassed.
I mean, I think if you were the person that actually who's going to spend the money, would you rather him throw fake hundreds at you or real gold coins at you? I'm taking the Sacagawea coins.
Well, no. First of all, the Sacagawea coins can hurt you. So if somebody makes it rain with those things and they're like really serious about it, the whole fountain, you know what I'm talking about. That's dangerous. That's super dangerous. And again, something tells me that if you've got an Usher bill, those things are so rare, you put it on eBay, Craigslist, you could probably get like $1.25, $1.50 out of the whole deal and take a girl out on a good first date. So an Usher 100 is probably worth about $150, if you get my point.
Coming up in a little bit, we'll talk some Royals baseball. Whit Merrifield was on Cody and Gold earlier today. Here's what he had to say about the Royals getting the win against the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, that was big for us. We for some reason, we haven't played well against those guys. And, I mean, they're a talented group. I'm not going to say they're not talented. They are. They're a talented group. But, you know, we are as well. And, you know, if we go out and play good baseball and they beat us six straight or whatever it was last year, then, you know, hats off to them. But we just don't feel like we've been able to play good baseball against those guys. And yesterday wasn't great either. But, you know, we did enough to win the game. And that's a huge point on our team this year is you know, you're not going to win. There's an old saying, and I might get the numbers a little bit wrong here, but I forget and I forgot who said it, but it was a famous manager said, you're going to win 50 games a year. You're just going to win them. You're going to lose 50 games a year just by losing them. And then those other 62 is what's going to determine your season. And those 62 this year is going to be is a big point on our team. We got to figure out ways to win those games. Like yesterday, didn't play well. Pitched great, but I guess offensively we didn't play well. But we were in it late in the game. Carlos had a huge homer for us, and then Scotty and Zimmer and Greg and Wade came in and did a great job for us, and we did enough to scratch across an extra run and win the game. And that's what we haven't done these past couple years, and it's been, like I said, it's been a huge focus point for us this year, and that was a good sign that we were able to win that game yesterday.
Yesterday sort of felt like in a basketball game where, let's say you're down two, and you have an open three, and if you make that three, you're up one, your team has the momentum, and the other team probably calls timeout. Or you miss the wide open three. It creates a long rebound. The other team gets the rebound. They get out in transition. They get a fast break. They get a layup. So you had a chance to be up one, and now you're down four, and you're sort of your momentum is down because of that missed shot. I think yesterday counted a lot more than one win for the Kansas City Royals. Sure, it only counted one win on the standings, but knowing how that team dominated you last season, knowing sort of the preseason expectations people have for the White Sox and finding a way to grind out a victory against them yesterday and match the amount of wins that you had in all of 2020 against the White Sox, I think from a confidence boost standpoint was really big for Kansas City.
I completely agree. It's the how, the who, and the when. Like, how'd they do it in comeback fashion where they blew the lead? who they beat, the White Sox, the cream of the crop in the division. And you can talk about the who from the Royals side. It was the new guys. It was Benintendi. He needed to see something good happen. It was Maria, Carlos Santana hitting the big home run. And then the win. Like, we always talk about the Royals can't get off to a bad start. They can't bury themselves. And I know there's not that much of a difference 7 games in if you're 3-4, 4-3. But if you would have lost that game, man, all of a sudden the momentum is not anywhere on your side. I think the Royals, what is it, 3-game series versus the Angels or 4? 3-game series against the Angels. Now that they got the snowball rolling, they're going to take all 3. Get your broom out, C-Dot.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll keep talking about the Kansas City Royals, and Mike Trout is coming to town. Does that matter? I'll explain what I mean next. Keep it locked in right here. It's The Drive.